So let me welcome everybody to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. We have one case set for oral argument. I understand that the lawyers have checked in. Before we get started, though, I'll introduce the panel that we have today. To my left is Justice Dana Womack. To my right is Justice Dabney Basil, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. So with that, I'll ask the clerk to call the case, please.
The court will now call the University of North Texas Health Science Center versus Selena
Thank you. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. Plaintiffs claim that the university's willed body program allegedly mishandled the dead body of plaintiff's decedent, Jose Carlos Gonzalez. Plaintiff's suit, however, is barred by sovereign immunity. And plaintiffs cannot overcome that immunity because they have not alleged and cannot allege facts affirmatively demonstrating a waiver of that immunity under the Tort Claims Act. The university's brief cites several dead body cases, including the City of Raymondville, the Dominguez case, and the Clark case. All of these cases support this conclusion here. And tellingly, plaintiffs have not even attempted to distinguish any of them. Now, analysis in this case starts with the text of 101.0212 of the Tort Claims Act. It states in relevant part that a governmental unit of this state is liable for personal injury and death so caused by the use of tangible personal property. And here, plaintiffs cannot establish either element, that is, the use element or the proximate causation element. Now, regarding the use of property element, the plaintiffs posit two theories of waiver. Plaintiffs contend, first, that the university mishandled Jose's corpse by using tangible personal property to remove Jose's organs. And second, that Jose's corpse in and of itself is tangible property that the university used to harvest organs. Neither of these theories is valid. Let me address their first theory. Even if the court construes the plaintiff's pleadings liberally in their favor and looks for the pleader's intent, as the standard of review requires this court to do, plaintiff's first theory still will not work because the gravamen of plaintiff's mishandling claim is not actually about a misuse of tangible property, but rather it is about the university's allegedly misidentifying Jose's corpse as being the corpse of Jesse Gonzalez.
Counselor, were Mr. Gonzalez's organs harvested?
Pardon me, Your Honor.
Were Mr. Gonzalez's organs harvested?
His organs were removed, yes,
and,
sir.
And what happened to those organs?
The record does not show what has happened to those organs. The plaintiffs have not alleged anything other than that the university harvested the organs.
Okay. We don't know what happens to them routinely. Are those organs sold to transplantees?
The allegation here is that Jesse Gonzalez was the program donor and that he donated these organs to the university for its willed body program for whatever use they were going
that.
To use them for, whether that is for organ transplants or research and something of that nature, some medical scientific use. But the pleadings don't allege any of that, and we're limited here by what the allegations are in the pleadings.
Well, would it make any difference? I noticed that you relied heavily on the Sampson case, the idea that any use or condition of tangible personal property would have to be contemporaneous. The use would have to be contemporaneous with the injury. So just hypothetically, what if the plaintiffs were actually somehow there, watching and saw that their loved one's organs were being removed, would that change anything about your analysis?
That would change the analysis entirely in this case, Your Honor. That's not the allegation in this case. Under Your Honor's hypothetical, the university would have, if I'm understanding it correctly, would have Jose's corpse. The family, for whatever reason, is aware that we'd have it and could see us removing it. But here, the difference is there was a misidentification of the two dead bodies here. Believing that we had Jesse Gonzalez's corpse, we removed them in accordance with his wishes because he was a donor under the program.
Now, let me interrupt you again. Sorry. So I've read Judge Fahey's order on the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office. And I saw something in the briefing where you're suggesting that she shouldn't have granted that. Was the medical examiner's office in a different legal posture as far as the facts alleged?
Your Honor, I'm not aware that we've taken any position with regard to what Judge Fahey did with the medical examiner's office. What I believe Your Honor is driving at is our friends on the other side have made a assertion that unless the university can first prove that its employees were cloaked with official immunity, the university's not entitled to the protection of sovereign immunity. And that just simply is not the law. And so I think official immunity came up with regard to the medical examiner's office. I don't know what they argued there, and we're not taking any position regarding them.
So you think it's just apples and oranges?
Well, as far as we're concerned, official immunity has nothing to do with our sovereign immunity in this case. And plaintiffs haven't carried their burden to show a waiver of that immunity. What the gravamen of their claim essentially is that we misused information when we mixed up the two bodies, or allegedly. There aren't specific facts describing how we misidentified or how we failed to verify, but giving them the benefit of the doubt, as we're required to do, they've at least alleged that the university misidentified. That alleges a misuse of information, and it's black letter law in Texas that does not waive immunity under 101.0212.
Your position is that there is no amount of discovery that would reveal any facts.
None whatsoever, Your Honor, because using the standard of review and the Grovelman rule, which the Texas Supreme Court has recently, is 2019 in the McKenzie case, said that when you're analyzing these tort claims cases, you look for the true nature, the real substance, the Grovelman of the claim, not just the plaintiff's characterization. And we have inferred every fact favorable to the plaintiffs here. And even with all those facts, they still can't get over the immunity bar. They haven't alleged a waiver. And furthermore, they haven't even told us what facts they would allege that they think would somehow bring this within the waiver of immunity in 0212. So the substance of their claim is that they were harmed by the university's allegedly negligent misidentification of the corpse. And as a result, Jose's corpse wasn't delivered to them for burial in the same condition that death found him, and according to their wishes. And when you think about that claim, they aren't really complaining about the tools, the instruments, the equipment that the university used to remove, store, or transport Jose's organs, and they're not complaining about the method. They're not saying anything that we did with regard to actually removing the organs was negligent.
Their brief says, in truth, a deceased body used to harvest organs for use by a willed body program has all the properties of property. So they are making that argument, aren't they?
Well, Your Honor's question gets to their second theory, that the Jose's dead body itself is tangible personal property, the use of which waives immunity. That theory is unprecedented. There is no case in Texas that has ever held that using a dead body for purposes of taking tissues or organs is a use that waives immunity under 0212.
Is there a case that addresses that particular?
There is a case that addresses it in our favor, Your Honor, and that is the Dominguez case. In Dominguez, you had a claim that there was a misidentification of dead bodies, and the plaintiffs were arguing, well, the charred and burned remains of the decedent were actually property that was mishandled and thus misidentified. And the court said, absolutely not. That states a misidentification or misuse of information claim. And a dead body is not property for purposes of the Tort Claims
Act. There's no case addressing the harvested organs, though, is there?
To my knowledge, there isn't. Dominguez is the closest case. And indeed, at page 13 of our friend's briefs, they admit that there is no case to support this theory. But there's also Texas Supreme Court cases involving dead bodies. And even though those cases don't involve governmental units, the Texas Supreme Court has long held, at least since the 1930s and probably even going back into the late 1800s, the Texas Supreme Court has flatly rejected the notion that a dead body is tangible property.
Vis-a-vis the family. The family has a quasi-property right in it.
They do.
But does that necessarily define the relationship between the health science center in the body or the organs?
What it does, Your Honor, in those cases, the Texas Supreme Court expressly held that a dead body is not property. And also said a dead body is unique. And the plaintiffs would say, well, it's tangible, it's movable, it's corporeal, but a dead body is not a mere utilitarian object. It may be a tangible thing, but the Texas Supreme Court said a dead body is not property. And the text of the Tort Claims Act doesn't just say use of a tangible thing, it says a use of tangible personal property. So Nelson, Evanston, Burnett all stand for that proposition. I would also like to point out a couple other another persuasive authority that plaintiffs have not even attempted to distinguish here, and that is the City of Raymondville case. And that case stands for the proposition that if a misuse of information causes a governmental unit to mishandle a dead body, then there is no waiver of immunity. And even if that misuse of information resulted intangible personal property being used in connection with the dead body, the gravamen of the complaint is still a misuse of information and not a misuse of tangible personal property. Now let me, that's what I have to say so far about the use of property, and I'll answer any other questions if the court would like, but let me turn now to proximate causation, the other element that plaintiffs cannot establish here. The proximate cause of plaintiff's harm in this case is the misidentification of the body. It's not the use of property. It was but for the misidentification, the harm would not have occurred in this case. In short, the misidentification is the actual cause of plaintiff's harm, not the use of property. And plaintiffs in their brief they essentially make the argument, well, property was involved in all of this, and so that's enough to waive immunity. But we have cited in our case the Clark versus Southwestern University Medical Center case, a dead body case, and in that case, the court Dallas Court of Appeals held that just because property was involved, the proximate cause of the claim of the action is actually the mishandling, not the involvement of the property. And I would just also state that it's just black letter law. The Texas Supreme Court has stated and reaffirmed numerous times, and numerous courts of appeals have held, that the mere involvement of property is not enough to waive immunity. And that's all the plaintiffs are alleging here, is just the mere involvement. Involvement may be necessary, but it's not sufficient. And we only have a limited waiver of immunity. And if immunity was waived just because property was involved, I see my time was up. May I finish my
answer? Your thought? Yep.
If every case involving property waived sovereign immunity, that would defeat the purpose of it being in a limited waiver. And there basically would be no point to the waiver of immunity.
Thank you.
May it please the court? Your Honors, my name is Megan David, and I represent the appellees in this case. By now, you're generally aware of the facts and issues in dispute. The crux of the dispute in this case is whether UNT is immune from suit or does a waiver of immunity apply under the Texas Tort Claims Act. We're specifically here today discussing immunity under Section 101.021, Section 2, which specifically addresses injuries caused by the use of tangible personal property. The heart of their argument is that it was the misuse of information, and that is absolutely not the case.
Well, what exactly is the tangible personal property that you say was used in such a way that it waives their immunity?
Sure. Twofold, really. The dead body itself and the organs within that body. I will posture that there are, in fact, several cases that support that a dead body and the organs therein are tangible personal property.
I'm curious to hear what those cases are. I've seen references in cases to the fact that bodies and tissues are property, but we're dealing here with a very specific issue of waiver of immunity based on the use of tangible personal property, which is term of art, I think, under the Tort Claims Act. So
yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, and Judge, whether a deceased body is specifically considered tangible personal property, specifically for the purposes of immunity, has never been squarely addressed. But there's enough in these cases to come to the conclusion that I have, Your Honor. Number one, before I get into the case law, if you think of it from a pure logic standpoint, if organs in your body and your body itself, once you are deceased, is not tangible personal property, then what is it? It's not real
property. Who has property rights in it? I mean, I think that the line of Supreme Court cases going back says, you know, a corpse is really sui generis. I mean, it's quasi property, really.
Yes.
So how does that square with the concept of tangible personal property?
A couple of things. One important point to understand is that something can be classified as property regardless of who possesses that property. Regardless of whether the corpse is the tangible personal property of this person or that person, it doesn't change its classification. An example would be an abandoned house. Regardless of who owns it, it's still real property. Go ahead, Your Honor.
I was going
to say that the Texas Health and Safety Code, specifically Section 711.002, called the disposition of remains, it's a statute that literally lays out who has the right to control the disposition, the cremation of the decedent's remains, who has the right to burial, who has the right to decide cremation versus burial, who has the right to transfer the body.
And those are exactly the things that fall within the realm of quasi property rights.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's how it has been. That's how it has been classified. Now, I will tell you that in the SCI case versus Nelson, it is a Supreme Court of Texas case from 2018. And I quote, the notion of a quasi-property right arose to facilitate recovery for the negligent handling of a dead body. And that was decided in the early 1900s.
The SCI involved a private defendant, right? Not a governmental entity?
Yes. Some of these cases talk about it in the sense that it's not the direct issue, but there's enough collateral rhetoric and discussion that we can derive from it that it is treated in history as tangible personal property.
If we assume this is the family only has a quasi property right in the corpse, is it tangible personal property?
Yes, Your Honor. And on that, I'm going to go to just some basic black law definitions. Personal property, any movable or intangible thing that is subject to ownership. We have that here. Doesn't necessarily mean it's owned by a particular person, but subject to ownership meaning it can be owned as opposed to a human being. Tangible personal property, property that has physical form and characteristics, such as organs or a deceased body. Further, Your Honor, I'm going to look to... the Evanston case. This court, another Supreme Court case, states, quote, the designation of an object as tangible personal property means that it has acquired sufficient rights to be recognized as property under the law. Some of the key rights in American jurisprudence that make up the bundle of rights, of property rights, include the right to possess, use, transfer, and exclude others. And that's what we have here. The plaintiffs did have the right upon their decedent's death to control and transfer the body.
But that's just the same thing as what the quasi property right to for the next of kin to dispose of, to take possession of and dispose of a body in accordance with the community standards. I mean, but it's only that, right? I mean, I don't think Evanston stands for the proposition that next of kin has any broader rights to a corpse.
Correct. And that's why, like you were saying, it's very unique in the law. So when we talk about property generally, we're thinking about chattel. I kind of look at a deceased body sort of like a pet. Appellant argues, a dead body is not mere property. That's kind of more towards your emotions. There are certain things that are classified under the law as property, but you don't call it property. A dead body, you wouldn't say, this is my property. It just doesn't sit right, just kind of like a pet. But it is, in fact, under the law, classified as tangible personal property. It meets all the definitions, and case law suggests that a corpse is tangible personal property. Along those lines, your organs. Me, standing here today, I could choose to be an organ donor. And I could say, upon my death, I want to donate my organs. Why? Because that's my personal property. It's tangible personal property. No one goes around calling their organs property because it's bizarre. But under the law, that's what it is. Not to mention that if you are an organ donor, it is notated on your state of Texas issued driver's license. So the state does recognize that you have the right to control your internal organs, which is...
That's a living person, though.
Correct, but they only become right. Well, I would argue that organs, whether you're living or not, are tangible personal property.
Do you have a case from Texas or any other jurisdiction in this country that says organs are tangible personal property or have the attributes of personal property?
I do not, Your Honor. It's just common sense, in my opinion, that that's what it would fall under. It wouldn't make sense to fall under any other classification.
Well, so I noticed that UNT has several times talked about the Dominguez case,
yes.
Which I didn't notice was addressed in your brief. How do you respond to the Dominguez case, which seems to pretty clearly say that a corpse is not... not the sort of property that you're wanting it to be.
Yes. And basically, as far as the Dominguez case goes, it's a 10th Court of Appeals case from 2007. And basically, courts have different views on this. This case does not 100% come out and negate the plaintiff's arguments, but I would argue that the 2018 case of SCI versus Nelson does discuss how a corpse is considered quasi-property.
But that was not an immunity case, though.
No, Your Honor.
So that's where I guess I'm getting hung up. Yes, I mean, you know, SCI, those sorts of cases, I can see how plaintiffs have various causes of action for mishandling of corpses and all that sort of thing. But we're dealing with, you know, I mean, the legislature has to have very, very clearly meant for the state to be subject to lawsuits over the use of tangible personal property.
Yes, Your Honor. And to that note, like I said, this exact issue has never been decided as far as an opinion from the Supreme Court of Texas. But again, a lot of the discussions in many of the case law leads us to believe and supports the argument that a body and the internal organs also are tangible personal property, not to mention that logic dictates it.
Are you limiting then the tangible personal property we're talking about to the organs and the body and not talking about the actual scalpel or whatever tools were used to remove the organs?
No, I'm not limited. Excuse me, I'm not limiting us at all to that. It is implied. I can't sit here and tell you what tools were used, but it is implied that obviously tools were used, and that is something also.
Okay, so you've suggested that if we don't affirm altogether, that you should at least have an opportunity to go back and replead after doing some discovery. I'm curious what facts you don't know that you would like to know that you think would clearly waive immunity.
Yes, Your Honor. As far as that is concerned, I believe that we have enough support here to prove that a dead body is, in fact, tangible personal property, as well as the tools, as well as the organs. As far as I know that they were claiming that we didn't allege proximate cause in enough or in the correct way, I don't believe that, but that's really where I was coming in to say if there's some defect with specifically the element of proximate cause. As far as the facts go, I think that we did plead that sufficiently.
Are you only wanting an opportunity to replead, or are you also wanting discovery? I wasn't clear on that.
To remand the case for further proceedings, uphold the trial court's decision, and then we would, you know, move on with discovery, yes.
So what do you want to discover?
Well, just, I mean, as far as here today, what I'm not saying is I need time to do more discovery to come up with.
You've got everything you need for the jurisdictional issue.
I believe so, yes. And I will say, Justice Kerr, you asked my opposing counsel about just kind of the differences between the Tarrant County, what they filed, and then what UNT filed. It was quite similar. The differences basically were, number one, Tarrant County pled a plea to the jurisdiction. They pled a motion to dismiss, obviously quite similar. Tarrant County, the issue was more focused on official versus sovereign immunity, and that was again rehashed in the argument with UNT. What was also brought up with UNT was this issue of tangible personal property, and it's kind of taken off in that direction.
But do you agree with Mr. Leinberger that the idea of official immunity doesn't come into play because UNT is a state entity?
I think at this point the issue is more tangible personal property, yes. And okay. And obviously, again, plaintiffs believe that we have enough here to support that.
So if I'm trying to put myself in the role of plaintiff's counsel here, if I were going to go back and do discovery, I think that what I would primarily be wanting to know from UNT is how the information got mixed up.
That, yes, that would be question one.
Right, which sort of seems to tie into UNT's argument here, because I think the cases are pretty clear that misuse of information does not waive immunity. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And on that point, Your Honor, I would say that I believe in this case, without doing any discovery, that both are in play. I believe that a misuse of information occurred, and I believe a misuse of tangible personal property occurred. And because a misuse of information also occurred, does not immunize them from the tangible personal property aspect of the negligence.
I'm still struggling with the difference and what happened with the medical examiner's office at the trial court and what happened with the university. According to the judge's order, the medical examiner only moved on sovereign immunity grounds. You know, you just stated otherwise. And it also, in this case, it said they were given an opportunity to amend and to do limited discovery. Is that going forward right now?
Your Honor, yes and no. So we were given an opportunity to move forward with discovery, and I believe me and the opposing counsel for Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office came up with dates. We were in the process of getting deposition notices out, and then this happened, so the case has stayed. So not any more discovery has been done in, as far as it relates to Tarrant County.
Is the case, did Judge Fahey stay the case, or you and the Tarrant County lawyer just decided to wait and see what happened?
Is it officially basically stayed? Just the automatic stay pending this proceeding right now.
So nothing's going on in the trial court?
That's not 100% true. It's a little bit legally complicated. There is a sister case out of California with some of the same defendants and some different defendants. So some discovery has moved forward through the California case, and it's related to the Texas case. Technically, what you said is correct.
Okay. Sorry, we're sort of going far afield of the record,
sure.
But I'm just curious.
Okay. Yeah. The point I think I'm trying to make is no depositions or discovery have been done in regards to UNT or Tarrant County at this point. But yes, the judge did order and allow that for some point in the future, hopefully. And I also wanted to bring up the fact that opposing counsel talked about the City of Raymondville case, and that case was negligence based on a misuse of information, and I will agree with that. I read that case. I don't think that had anything to do with tangible personal property. So there's really no need for me to distinguish that particular case. And I would again say just common sense and logic. As far as who owns the property right, I will say again, it doesn't matter as far as what the property is classified as. But as far as the property rights, we're saying quasi-property, you still have property rights and quasi-property. If the dead body itself is quasi-property and it's sitting at the morgue, I can't just go in from off the street and take it. I know that sounds gruesome, but it's the facts of the case. I can't just go take that body because I don't own it or I don't possess it. The morgue does. So if we're talking about possession, ownership, control, at that point, it's in the control of the morgue. And then it either goes to the next of kin, or if the next of kin says, I would like to exercise my property right to transfer it and donate it to science, which is what the UNT World Body Program is for, then it goes to them. And then it's their property.
And that's assuming that the morgue hasn't put the wrong toe tag on.
Correct. Part of it, yes.
Their property. What do you mean by that?
Well, at that point, before a body is identified, or I'm not sure exactly of the process, but once the body is at the morgue, before it's released to anyone, they have to confirm who is the next of kin. They've got to sign off on it. So there is a process because they want it to go to the right hands. So that also goes towards property rights and property ownership and possession, the right to control. So they have a whole process, and there's rules and statutes that line up who has those rights. Who is the next of kin?
That all presupposes a correct identification of who's in the morgue, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would argue that a big part of the identification process is using the body itself, height, weight, race, age, those sorts of things. So you're using that piece of tangible personal property along with information to come up with an identification or a misidentification. In this case,
have you pleaded that UNT misused Mr. Gonzalez's the fact of his weight, height, whatever that should have?
Specifically, no. But one of the reasons is because, you know, discovery hasn't happened. So I can't sit here and 100% say how it was identified, what they used to identify or misidentify. But we know that the body itself is used in any identification process. It's the main thing that's used, along with other things. Whether it's fingerprints, hair samples, DNA, I would argue that if they're, you know, getting DNA from a dead body, that's also personal property.
I'm going to steer you back just for 1 minute. I hope I'm not going off down a rabbit trail, but when you were saying that you're also talking, that you're not foreclosing the possibility that the tangible personal property that was negligently used were the tools used to harvest organs, are you talking about they used a hacksaw instead of a scalpel? I mean, how would you negligently use an organ removal tool?
Good question, and here's the answer. We're not claiming that they negligently dissected or negligently harvested. We're just claiming that doing it at all was the negligence. They are supposed to have, you know, obviously the next of kin sign off on something like that, and that didn't happen here. And I would also argue that the misidentification and what happened to the body afterwards, which can only really be called a desecration because it wasn't the right person, are one and the same. And you can't really look at one without the other. And both were obviously proximate causes of my client's damages and injuries. I have 10 seconds left, Your Honor. I will just say that I will rest my case, and I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Several things, and I'm just going to tick them off quickly. Contrary to my friend on the other side, the cases that she's referring to and just her general statements that that a dead body is tangible personal property, that is just not the law. She did not stand up here and tell you any cases that hold that. And especially the Evanston and Nelson case that she relies so heavily on, those actually support the state's position in this case, not our friends on the other side. So I guess here we're two ships passing in the night, and I would just commend those cases to the court, commend our briefing on this. We did extensive briefing on Evanston and Nelson and Burnett, and so we will just rest on our briefing and what the cases themselves say. Our friends on the other side, I heard them concede that their first waiver theory wasn't what they were alleging, and then they kind of walked it back. And then later, when they given yet another opportunity, they stood up here and specifically said, no, the university didn't misuse the tools in taking out the body. Well, that's what you need to allege a misuse of tangible personal property. There has to be a negligent use. The next point, my friend on the other side says that a dead body is subject to ownership. That is flatly contradicted by the cases. The cases specifically say that the only right that the survivors, the next of kin, have in a dead body is a very limited quasi-property right to have the body, possess the body so that it can be disposed of according to their wishes. That is the only property right. And I should make clear here, we're not talking, a dead body is not quasi-property. What specifically, and I don't mean to be pedantic about this, but the court talks about property really isn't even a thing. A property is talking about those bundle of rights. And the only very narrow right that survivors have is a quasi-property right. Ownership of a body is not a property right that the survivors have. As far as repleting, I think I heard my friend on the other side concede that this case does not need to be remanded, that there aren't any other facts that they feel they need to have discovered. There's not any more facts that they need to allege in their pleadings in order to overcome the sovereign immunity waiver here. So I hope that the court will take note of that and not remand this case for further discovery or repleting, particularly since our friends on the other side say they don't need it. I also think I heard my friend on the other side concede that the Raymondville case was about a misuse of information and that she couldn't distinguish it. Well, specifically, there was an argument in there that the city of Raymondville's governmental immunity was waived because there was a use of property that resulted from a misuse of information. And the court in Raymondville said, no, 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 your case is not about a use of tangible personal property. The gravamen of your case is a misuse of information. So Raymondville supports our position, defeats their position, and they concede they cannot distinguish it. And towards the tail end of my friend's argument, she talks a lot about, well, the body has to be weighed and this and that. All of these things that she's talking about are not in her pleadings, are not in this record. They're outside the purview of what we may consider here. There is nothing in the record that would support any of that, and I would urge the court to ignore it. With that, I would say that what we have here, it was the allegedly mistaken decision to remove the organs from Jose's corpse instead of Jesse's corpse that was the negligent, irrespective of the property and method used to remove the organs, and we ask that you reverse and render judgment for the university.
Thank you, counsel, for the very enlightening oral argument. It's been very helpful. And with that, your case is submitted, and you're free to go about your day. Thank you very much.